sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Phone lines are open. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. We wanted to start at the top of this hour. Our feature is, you know, what can you buy that gardener on your list? And, Ton, there are some pretty cool things that you can buy for gardeners on your list.
Yeah, I have always found gifts for gardeners, like articles, during Mother's Day and Christmas and things. And I always have some good suggestions, but I took a different strategy. I used
right
a different strategy this time and
went
just
right
went to Amazon
source
and put gifts for gardeners in. And some interesting things came up. There were some things I think are missing, but different than we've ever talked about.
Okay. One of my favorites, just looking at these things, is the mat for repotting plants, because I always make such a mess. Like, I'm always on my kitchen counter making a huge mess repotting my indoor plants. And they have a cool mat that I like that has, you know, the ends tip up. And it's not very expensive. I mean, one of them is like $8, another one's like $15, and that would really save a lot of mess around
it
my
would
house.
It would. I mean,
would
that
kind of
is something
up in a stocking stuffer
yeah
kind of gift.
If you're careful, you could actually use it on a kitchen table and keep the potting soil from getting everywhere. And I would see that it would be useful for some other things too. You know, maybe some putting some trays on top of it to keep water contained. There's looks like it has a lot of uses.
Mm-hmm. But there are some cool things here.
One of them that I really like are the garden workbenches. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not talking a workshop bench, but something you can either sit or kneel on that has pouches on the side to store your gardening tools. And these are very useful for those that have a bad back. Or if you are, I know a lot of soils have rocks in them, or it just hurts your knees to have your knees, especially if you're in shorts, on the soil. And so these benches will collapse down so that where you sit, you can put your knees on it and you have a cushioned area and you can just move it to the next spot if you're weeding or putting seeds in. But then if you are working with taller things, you can just sit down.
This is a bad place for me to be looking right now because I want to buy things for myself. Aren't we supposed to be giving to others?
You can buy yourself Christmas presents and just put my dear husband.
Oh, yeah. There are some cool garden solar lights out there that look like flowers. Look like an it's like a waterproof orange metal LED flower. They're beautiful. I mean, there's just so many fun things for gardeners right now. I don't, you know, if you have a gardener on your list, make sure you check out some of these items. What were some of your other favorites?
One of the strangest, and I don't know how they would work, but mm-hmm. Nizivity garden gloves with claws for digging. Claw gardening gifts for women.
And might make my gloves last longer since I
it
seem
would
to do that
and if
anyway
you're digging in the dirt and pulling things around, they're interesting and it almost just looks like, yeah, they're a canvas or a fabric glove with these claws on the front of it that cover almost like you put your fingers into them, and you don't look like Freddy Krueger or Wolverine, but it's a little along those lines. And look, that was one of the most unique ones that I saw.
Yeah, it's nice to have some of the more non-traditional. I mean, we all think of some of the, you know, the spades and the different tools for outdoors. But yeah, the non-traditional ones are a little more fun.
They are. I mean, one that I bring up every year that I think is just needed by any gardener is called a hori hori knife or a Japanese gardening knife. And these will generally come, they're a narrow, they look a little bit like a little garden shovel, hand shovel. But they have a narrower blade on them, and then one side will be serrated, and then the other side is not. And they can be used for planting bulbs, planting transplants, for weeding, for cutting open bags. They are just so useful. And so a Japanese gardening knife is one that I just, in my garden, I use all the time.
Yeah, there's a new one that I've never seen, a hummingbird house, but it's, do hummingbirds go in houses? Birds go in bird houses?
They do, depending on what it is. I know that the orchards use raptor boxes, and they're occupied by several species, and the raptors will help keep the mice and gophers and birds down that feed on the fruit. And so there are situations that they will work.
But hummingbirds?
Hummingbirds, I don't have enough knowledge about hummingbirds to know where they land for the night.
These are pretty gifts, but I'm not so sure that they're practical gifts. Anyway, just some fun stuff.
Yes. And so, I mean, there's other areas. I have a lot of caution about Temu just because of how they track you once you log in. Mm-hmm. But Temu has some really inexpensive gardening gifts for transplanting or growing seeds and things. And so if you're looking for very inexpensive, if somehow you can do a dummy account and get them off your phone after you're done, Temu may be someplace else that you can get some very inexpensive gardening gifts.
And there's some fun gardening shirts. If you don't want to spend a lot of money, there are some fun ones out there as well.
Yes. And if they have cats on them, all the better.
Okay. The cat lover in you.
Yes.
Right?
The gardening. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And the number to call with your questions. We're going to take a break. And the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. We have a lot of text questions coming in. We'll get to those next. Number to text us your questions, 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Next person, Ton, says, when can they prune their snowball bush? It's almost as tall as their house. Renewal pruning, but when do you do that?
They would wait for spring after it's done blooming.
You do it now, you won't have any snowballs on that bush.
You won't. And so what you would do is use a technique called renewal pruning, where you go into the middle of the shrub and cut the branches out that are the tallest branches. And you'll do about 20 to 25% of them. Mm-hmm. What will happen is it will bring the size down by about 30 to 40% just by cutting the tallest branches out. Mm-hmm. And then you do this after it's done blooming, and then you give them a light haircut just to even out the shape, and you're done. Okay. Don't just shear it, because that's really rough on them.
The next listener has a sequoia seeding that they bought at a gas station last August. They've had it in a little pot. They want to know how they can keep it alive.
It depends on the species, because if it's true coastal sequoia, they are not really hardy along the Wasatch Front in a dry climate. It may grow for a few years, but once it's exposed to temperatures below 0 to 10, it'll die. If it's the inland sequoia dendron, which is in like Kings Canyon and Yosemite National Park, those are a little more hardy and it may survive outside. And so it just really depends on if it's true sequoia or if it's the inland sequoia, sequoia dendron, because you really need to know the difference. And you can look up pictures online and quickly know if the coastal sequoia has more of a true needle look to it, almost like a U maybe, and sequoia dendron has a little bit more of a juniper foliage. And so if you can differentiate between the two, but you're probably not going to be able to grow it long term as a houseplant.
Next person says, last summer they got powdery mildew on their pumpkin plants and even on a couple of their flowering plants. And they think this is curious because they have a drip system. They're wondering what's wrong.
Well, they're probably in an area where maybe humidity is a little higher, or there's a lack of wind. Those are two things that also make plants very susceptible to powdery mildew besides overhead watering. And oftentimes, just because of our cooler nights through September, late August through September, powdery mildew is a lot more prevalent because of the increased humidity that we get with those in combination with cooler nights. And so they could be doing everything right and still get it. And so the only things I really know to do is to maybe try something like neem oil every 3 or 4 days to see if they can suppress it for another week or two. Because you, if it's pumpkins, you only need to get them into mid-September and you'll get pumpkins. Even if they're green, they will turn orange by Halloween.
Mine did, by the way.
And so the, your goal is mid to late September. The some other things you can look at is you probably will have to purchase them online. But we can have our callers if they know of local retailers. But there's what's called powdery mildew-resistant pumpkins. And sometimes they'll say something like Mustang PMR. That PMR just stands for powdery mildew resistant. But look up powdery mildew resistant pumpkins. Plant them, if you just have one gardening space, just, you know, plant them in a different spot in your garden and continue to drip irrigate them. But if they're powdery mildew resistant, they will give you another week or two. They're still going to get it, but you can delay a little longer. And maybe with some regular use of neem oil, which has some anti-powdery mildew properties in combination with the powdery mildew resistant varieties, I think that they will be okay.
Next listener says they thought they did everything correctly, storing their amaryllis and potting it again, but no leaves have grown, let alone flowers.
All I can really say is, unfortunately, that's just what amaryllis sometimes do. And if they leave it, they brought it out to the sunlight, you know, in a good bright window, and I would give it a good 2 months. And if it doesn't start to push some leaves, and you're watering it when it needs it and things, if it doesn't push leaves after a couple of months, it probably won't.
Our next person says their yew plants haven't been pruned in 20 years. They're about 15 feet tall. They want to prune them down to 8 to 10 feet. When is the best time of year, and do you have any other suggestions for them?
Yes, yeah, so the renewal pruning that we just talked about, they will use that with the yews, and they will do that in the spring, sometime from mid-March. And renewal pruning, they're only going to take out about 25% of the total branching, but they're going to take the tallest branches, follow them down towards the base, and cut them out. Now, if they're 15 feet tall, it's probably a variety called Hicks, U-H-I-C-K-S. Mm-hmm. And all the branches are tall, but you would just take the biggest ones out. But what they're trying to avoid is just giving them a flat haircut down to the new height, because that would take out about 50% of the foliage, which isn't good for their health. And so they take out about 25%, taking the worst offending branches out, and it could be a 2-year process, but just look up renewal pruning and use those principles to do your pruning.
And when would they do that?
Mid-March to early May.
Okay, next listener has a couple of tulip bulbs that didn't get planted. Can they put them in the ground?
They can. The tulips will leaf out, but they may not flower because they do need a period of time to put out roots. But tulips will last for years if they're hybrid. Some of the Darwin hybrids and the species tulips will last 4 years. And so I still think it's worth planting them even if they don't flower next year.
Next person would like to know, when do you repot an orchid and how?
Orchids will need to be repotted every 2 or 3 years. And what you're going to do is, because you have a really loose media, like the little chunk bark.
Mm-hmm.
You can pull it out carefully and you can trim some of the roots. You can, one, you take all the dead roots out. They're going to be dark brown and sometimes a little squishy. Those come off. If you've got roots that are damaged or a little long, you can snip those back. But then you need to get it in a container big enough that you can put a little bit of the bark in the bottom of the container, but then you fit the orchid in and gently let the bark fall down, almost like you're playing Plinko, and fall around the roots. And then just build that bark back up in the container around the roots.
Next person says they'd like to use, let's see. Mm-hmm. Should they be fertilizing their amaryllis right now while it's growing and blooming for better success next year?
They can start fertilizing it after the blooms are done and it's really actively growing. Right now, it wouldn't hurt, but they need to be fertilizing it from January through when it goes dormant in August or September, and you know put it into dormancy, and then you can let it sprout out again. It's kind of like a non-hardy tulip bulb, to where all the energy is stored when those leaves are green.
Okay, let me try this other one again. This person would like to use the pine shavings and chicken poop from their coop. Can they spread it thin on their garden and then till that in the spring, or is that
no
a bad idea?
No more than a half of an inch. Just because those wood shavings, I would rather see them compost it first, but if they're going to use it, I would rather see them use about a half inch and no more.
What's going to happen when they do that, though?
Well, if they put more down, say they put 2 or 3 inches, it could be very salty from the poultry manure, but then the wood shavings, because soil microorganisms are more efficient at absorbing soil nitrogen, it robs the soil of all available nitrogen, and it can stunt their plants. And so it could be a very bad thing if they do too much. And so when you're using raw manures, you never put more than about a half inch down, and you incorporate it into the soil, wait a couple of months, and then you can do another half inch or so. But just out of caution, never more than that.
Okay, next listener says their wife accidentally left their Meyer lemon tree outside overnight last week. Tree looks fine, but all the blossoms fell off, and they're wondering, did they lose all the blossoms for next year's crop?
Maybe. All they can do is bring it in and see if it forms new blossoms. I mean, on the bright side, they're not having to handle the lemons or do anything with them, so they can take a vacation from it.
Ton.
I'm just trying
that
to look at the bright
side.
Very
unsatisfying way to answer the question.
One time, someone in my family had a bunch of fruit trees, and they accidentally sprayed a dormant oil on the trees when they thought it was an insecticide, and it knocked most of the leaves and fruit off. Most of the trees re-leafed and were fine, but my mom, the person that did this got the year off. The wife got the year off from canning, and it wasn't a bad year.
All right.
So I should,
we're taking a break.
My parents don't really
get
listen
into
to
any
the show,
more trouble. So. We need to break for the bottom of the hour news. Number to call 801-575-8255. Evelyn will be up next, and the number to text 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chalaios, Ton Bettis with you this morning. We are taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. Evelyn is on the line from Morgan. Evelyn, good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question this morning?
I have a question about my Christmas cactus. It's about through blossoming right now. I had lots of blossoms on it, but very few of them developed. Most of them fell off. How do I prevent that?
Was the plant moved from one place to another at any time?
Yes. When it started blossoming, I moved it from my west window in the basement and moved it upstairs so I could enjoy the blossom.
Unfortunately, that may have done it. They are sometimes, when they're moved to different light levels and just the act of moving them, they get a little bit catty on you. And there's like, you moved me, I'm dropping all my blossoms. And so if it's upstairs, what I would recommend doing is, if you have any windows that have that same kind of cold exposure, that, you know, you could put it next to an upstairs window to see if you could cause it to form new blossoms.
Okay, you think it would blossom again, or am I too
late?
I do.
It's sure worth a shot.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
But it'll take 8 to 10 weeks, but it is sure worth trying.
Okay, and next year maybe I won't move it then.
Or yeah, if maybe move it upstairs in September or October to a cold location that it can still form blossoms.
Oh, what a good idea. Okay, thank you. I appreciate your help very much.
All right, Evelyn, thanks so much for your call. I didn't know that the Christmas cactus was that finicky.
They can be. The one thing about them is, if you move them, they can drop a lot of those buds they formed. And I don't know why, other than the light levels have changed, but they're kind of homebodies and like to be where they're at. And if you move them, it's really common for them to drop the blossoms, but they generally, in my experience, and this has happened a few times, they do form more blossom buds.
Yeah, I've noticed that when I'm watering, if I'm moving it into the sink, I need to be really super careful, because they'll lose some of those little buds if you're not careful.
They will.
All right. Christmas cactus are just one of those favorites. I don't know when they started being a favorite, but it's one of those things that you see in almost every house now. I had one neighbor who gave them for Christmas one year, which was a great present, by the way.
They are a great present for people that like houseplants. They are easy to maintain, easy to get to blossom, and they can live for 100 years. And my grandfather had one that was 50 or 60 years old that he actually swapped with a local garden center where he lived for several new houseplants because he had taken such good care of it. It was a showpiece, and they sent him home with some Boston ferns and other things, and he'd grow those for a few years and then take them back and trade them again. But yeah, they live a long time.
How do you know when it's time to repot these?
Just after a couple of years, 2 to 3 years, it's time. The soil, just for the very fact the soil breaks down and it loses its water holding capacity, it loses its nutrient holding capacity, it can start to get a buildup of diseases. And so you don't need to wash the soil out of the roots. But if you'll put it in a new pot every 2 to 3 years, and they'll tolerate being a little bit root bound. But they do need to be transplanted at least every 3 years.
Something that we haven't talked much about is the fact that they're pretty easy to take cuttings from and start new plants.
They are.
How do you do that?
You cut a section 2 to 3 segments long. And I think Mike last week he said, you know, they're called pads. They're not leaves, but we'll call them leaves just for the sake of keeping things easy. But they grow in kind of a chain of leaves. They're little pads, but you cut them. Make sure you know which end is growing, the growing tip, because you don't want to accidentally put them upside down into the soil. But you can root them into perlite or vermiculite or even a sharply drained potting soil. And what you would do is just plunge them in there one pad deep. And
then they're going to form roots on their
own? And they'll form roots on their own.
You don't do it in water or anything like your geraniums?
The water, because they're in water, those roots actually don't form many root hairs that absorb a lot of water because they're in water.
Okay.
And so I like to do it in vermiculite or even just in the container that I'm going to grow it in. And you might put a sandwich bag or a Ziploc sandwich bag over the top of the pot, rubber band it around the pot, and then put 2 or 3 holes in the bag with a pencil for circulation.
So it's like a mini greenhouse.
Yeah, it is. You don't want it to get too humid in there, but that will help hold the water. And you can leave that on for a week or two until it starts to get established.
Okay, this sounds like a really fun January project when I'm not so busy and I'm starting to think I want to be out in the yard again. That sounds like a fun January project.
You want to be around 70 to between 70 and 80 degrees. And so just someplace that you can do that. And they're pretty easy to root.
Wow. Now, if you'd started doing something like that in the fall, you could have been giving these for Christmas presents,
yes.
Right? Okay, something to think about for next year. Let's see. We have another text coming in now. This person says, what soil is best for the Christmas cactus?
General potting soil or a sharply drained potting soil.
Okay, because they said that they were told to put it in cactus soil.
Even though they're a cactus, they're not a desert cactus. They are native to tropical rainforests, and they're epiphytic, like the orchids we talked about earlier. And so the water they get they're not really a desert plant. And so you can grow them in a desert mix, but they do just fine in regular potting soil.
Okay, because it says one of the ones that they did okay in that soil, but the other one didn't do so well.
Yeah.
Okay, regular potting soil. Good to know. We're going to take a break, come back with more of your calls and questions. The number to call, phone lines are open, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you. Taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You still have 15 minutes left. And you can text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, says, they know it's late in the year, but they have a question about morning glory. They say over the years, it's been slowly spreading throughout their lawn. Is there anything that they can do about it?
Yes, there is, actually. And unfortunately, what it was sometime in early October. But there is a spray called Quinclorac that comes in several products. They're Monsanto, I guess it's now Scotts, makes a Roundup product that has no actual Roundup in it. It's quinclorac and sulfentrazone. That one is really good. There's Image All-in-One Lawn Weed Killer is another one that does a fantastic job. Q4 Plus is another one. But quinclorac does quite a number on field bindweed, which we sometimes call commonly the morning glory. In the spring, they could still use a quinclorac product and do pretty good at controlling the bindweed. Now that I've talked about the easy solution, there's a reason it's spreading through the lawn and that the lawn maybe needs some different management. And so making sure you're mowing it probably 3 inches to 2.5 to 3 inches, and then watering deeply less often so that twice to three times a week it's getting soaked 6 inches to a foot deep, and then fertilizing in the spring and fall and seeing if that's sufficient. And if it doesn't seem like it, then maybe adding one more in the summer. But what you're trying to do is create conditions that are best for the grass and not for the bindweed. Because if you have really healthy lawn, bindweed doesn't compete against it very well.
So when would they spray?
Sometimes it'll start to emerge in early May.
You have to wait till it emerges.
Yeah, you have to wait till it emerges. So late May to mid-June, if they're using something like the Image All-in-One Lawn Weed Killer, or the actual best time is in mid to late September to early October.
Okay, but they don't want to wait if they have a problem with it now.
No, but you could spray spring and fall.
Awesome. Okay, Earl in River... Well, not awesome that they have Morning Glory, but awesome that they can do both. Earl is on the line in Riverton. Good morning, Earl. What was your question?
I just wanted to get his opinion about this. I've got some very thin lawn. It's kind of sparse. It's because of it's pretty shaded. If I threw some seed out now and put a light layer of peat moss on it, would that give it an early start when it warms up again?
It would a little bit. You would want to put either creeping red fescue or chewing red fescue down. And if it's too shady, you'll have to redo that probably every year to 2 years because the grass won't grow there long term. So is it shaded because of buildings or trees?
Trees.
So you may have to, on a limited basis, if the grass keeps dying out and you want it there, limb the trees up or thin them a little bit to allow more sunlight through.
So I was just thinking if I, you know, threw some down in the fall that I could have maybe got it going early.
The time to do that would have been late August or after, you know, November, because you don't want that stuff germinating in late September and October because it won't root deeply enough. And as the ground freezes, it frost heaves out of the ground.
So when's the best time again?
Either late August, or you can do it now and just let it germinate in the spring.
That's kind of what my thoughts were, to see if it would just germinate in the spring because it'll be so cold. And,
yeah.
And it maybe give it a good jump start. Yeah. But what about watering? Do you think the moisture in the ground
will... The water in the ground will be fine, especially if you get rain and snow. What you could do is cover it with that quarter inch of peat moss. Now, one thing that may happen if the birds discover it until we get heavy snow, they may pick a lot of it up. And so I would maybe seed that at 5 or 6 pounds per 1,000 square feet.
Oh, I've got a big bag of it. I was thinking I could overabundance of seed won't be necessarily bad.
No, it's sometimes not necessary, but it's not bad.
Yeah. So if I just, I was thinking, I saw some peat moss over at IFA and I thought, maybe I'll just do that.
Yeah, quarter inch, about a third, quarter to a third of an inch and no more.
Okay. Yeah, I got the leaves up and everything all right.
Okay, so good.
But, you know, I know if leaves will suffocate your grass worse than anything.
Yep, they will.
So I'm going to try that this week and we'll see how it does in the spring.
Yeah, just make sure chewing's red fescue or creeping red fescue. If you have a grass, you can put it down. But if it's Kentucky bluegrass, it'll probably fade out in a year or two again.
So the Kentucky bluegrass is the problem.
It just is not very shade tolerant. The turf type tall fescue is moderately shade tolerant and the red fescue is the most shade tolerant.
Now, is that still a fine blade grass, though?
I mean, it is. Red fescue. The turf-type tall fescue looks a lot like Kentucky bluegrass. Red fescue has a very thin blade on it.
Do you think anybody would have any of that?
Yeah. You could go to, what city are you in again?
Regans or, Go to Regan's or something like that?
Yeah, Regan's may have a straight red fescue, but Granite Seed in Lehigh could sell it to you. I'll bet you Great Basin Turf and Orem could get it.
Biograss.
Biograss may have a straight red fescue also, or a shade mix with red and turf type tall fescue in it.
Okay, I'll just go get some red fescue and mix it in with this stuff, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, your other grass, if you have it, you could top dress your whole lawn with it, and it wouldn't hurt.
That's
anything.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to top dress the whole front lawn because it's pretty sparse.
Yeah, and where it's shady, put in that fescue.
Okay, well, the whole front yard. I mean, in my front yard, I probably get my most sunshine 10, 11 o'clock till 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, it sounds like if you're getting some direct sunlight in there for 3 or 4 hours, that red fescue may thrive in there.
I'll try it.
Make sure and fertilize in the spring, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll do that for sure.
Okay.
Right, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for your call this morning. Next person would like to know, can they give their apple trees a light trim this time of year?
No, it hasn't been cold enough. That's something I wanted to do an article and a deep dive on after Christmas, is look at a pruning schedule for winter into spring. But we've been in the 20s every night in the 40s and 50s consistently still. And those apple trees are not completely dormant. They did drop their leaves, but because the bark is still probably not, you still have some sap flow in there. And so pruning makes them even less hardy. And all of a sudden, if we drop from the 50s down to 10 at night or 0 at night, that really will damage those trees if you do a lot of pruning in them. And so they need to wait at least until mid-January.
Is that okay? Mid-January is usually when it happens.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Well, and that's when they can start. But the recommended time for apples is actually mid-February, just when it's still cold. But the danger of sub-zero temperature is starting to greatly diminish.
I never think about pruning anything in January or February.
No, the orchards start right after Christmas because they have to. And they start
so
with the
trees.
Apples and tart cherries because they tolerate the pruning better. But as a homeowner, unless you have to, and you're especially if you're doing your own pruning, mid-February for apples and pears, mid-March for the stone fruits.
Earl was mentioned leaves, and you mentioned get those leaves up. But I noticed, like, my lace leaf maple tree in the backyard, it hasn't even dropped its leaves yet.
Some trees don't, just genetically. Many oak species don't drop their leaves until spring, until February, March.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I see that, I always worry a little bit on maples because the leaves should drop in the fall, but it doesn't mean
well, I worry that the snow
dead.
Eventually is going to like sit on that and then, you know, crush the branches.
So if the tree is small enough and you can reach the branches, you can just gently rub your hand and just rub them off
but
if they are brown.
Gently, try to pull them off of there. Okay. Good to know. Because that tree is still covered. And I just worry every time it snows, like it's not snowed a ton, but it sits on there. I'm afraid it's going to break those branches. And, you know, they don't do very well when their branches get broken like that.
They don't. Those Japanese maples are just sensitive in our climate, and anything you can do to help them, the better. But it's unfortunately very common for them to just up and have a branch die or the whole thing die, and you never know why.
I love this plant. I spent a fortune for it. At one point, it really broke, and I thought, actually, Larry Sagers had said, that plant's not going to live, and it actually came out of it. But I had to be super patient, and it spent years not looking very great because it had such a severe break in it.
Yeah, and it did start looking better, though, so you were a very good steward.
But I was very patient, and most people, you know, when you have something in your yard that's not looking that great, you just start again.
Yes.
I was like, I paid $250 for this tree.
No, and it does take them a while to get established. And the lacier the leaf and the redder the leaf, the longer it takes. And so a straight green Japanese maple may have established in 2 to 3 years, but a red lace leaf may take 5 to 10 years before it's established.
Yeah, it looks great now. So, but I did notice I did lose another branch. And boy, when they lose branches, they don't look the best.
No, they don't. And they're slow growing.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse this morning. I want to remind folks that you can hear the show in podcast form whenever you'd like. Michelle, our crack producer, does a great job of putting it up, and now she's putting up the entire show so that you can listen to it, you know, just let it roll.
We did some surveying, and listeners have increased because of the change in format. So we appreciate Michelle doing that.
Yeah, it was down on Apple for a short time. There was some problem with the podcasting, but it is back up on Apple. Anywhere you'd like to get your podcast, you'll find it. You can also find it at kslpodcast.com. And a reminder, too, we are very active. Michelle is very active on social media. She does a great job of putting up all of the articles on the hourly features. If you just tuned in and you missed our hourly features this morning, for example, we started out the morning at 8 o'clock. We always do plant of the week, and we talked about the orchid and orchid care. There is so much misinformation on social media. You can check that out on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We also talked about Norfolk Island pine, which is just really a cute live Christmas tree for folks who've not seen that before. And then at the 10 o'clock feature was some ideas for that gardener on your Christmas list. So, Ton, you're not going to be out in the yard today?
I have a to-do list that doesn't include my yard, unfortunately.
I think a lot of people do. Hey, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be back next week.